Hey guys, welcome to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. This is the arena where we don't just talk about success, we talk about sustainability because the truth is a lot of people are trying to perform at this really high level on an empty tank and they're exhausted, inflamed, stressed, running on caffeine and willpower and wondering why they don't feel better. We live in a world of health hacks, the miracle supplements, endless advice. But what if the answer isn't another shortcut? What if it's understanding how the body was designed to work in the first place? Today, we're going to talk about performance, recovery, gut health, longevity, resilience, and how to separate science from marketing, which I think is a very important topic today. Today's guest is Grant Jenkins. He is an elite performance coach, a health entrepreneur, Managing Director of Propel Health Australia, and someone who has spent decades helping both athletes and everyday people perform at their best. Grant, thank you so much for being here at 5:30 a.m. your time to come into the hot seat. After working with elite athletes for decades, what was the moment that you realized that performance wasn't really about motivation at all?
Ah, great question. All right, so let's kick off right from the beginning. So, it's funny. There's actually one particular moment where I was like, "Whoa, I've got to change my thinking." So you can imagine, as at university, as a young coach, the dream was just to work with elite athletes. In fact, I had a my written down goal was to prepare an athlete for the pinnacle of their sport, and it was about 2012, 2012, I was at Wimbledon. I was working with a female tennis player. She was ranked about top 20 in the world. We're about 1 or 2 days out from her first match. She'd been preparing really well. We're at a restaurant, and the waiter comes over, and I couldn't believe the things she was ordering. Like, it just made no sense to me. It was not a performance nutrition. It was
Diet,
not. It wouldn't even be considered healthy. Like, you wouldn't want your 12-year-old kid at a birthday party eating the stuff, you know? And I was just sitting there thinking, she'd been coached by some of the best coaches. In Australia, we've got an institution called the Australian Institute of Sport. Some of the best dietitians, exercise physiologists, sports scientists, she'd come through that system. And here she was making what I considered such an elementary, I don't know about mistake, but it just wasn't what most people would think would be great nutrition to get the best performance. And I was literally at that dinner where I thought, I've got to do something different. I've got to get it's going to be hard to change her, and then of course it's only going to be able to change her or her mindset. I needed to get younger or more broad and kind of set those foundations. So anyway, that was the sort of start of it, where I thought, leave this high performance world alone, and let me focus on setting good foundations, whether it's for families, for kids, for parents, whatever the case might be. Let me try get them earlier and help educate from there. So that was pretty much the beginning of this phase of my career.
That's amazing. I mean, working with elite performance, I'm just curious what you would say separates them from everybody else.
Ah, now, no one's going to like the answer to this question. And what I mean by that is, I think we look at elite and we think that it's us. They just do things better or more or whatever. And there's an element of that. There are definitely some lessons we can take. But fundamentally, you need to understand that there's a genetic component, and people aren't comfortable with this, but there definitely is. I worked with a girl who got to number one in the world, Ash Barty, and she would need to train less than a lot of other people. In fact, when we tried to increase her volume, she actually got worse. And she would do the least amount of training. There was a cohort of similar age females coming through in the Australian system that I was working with. Some of them are still competing on the tour now, and they needed to do more. And it's an interesting one. There's no science here, but Ash's dad was actually a state-level golfer. He competed for the state of Queensland, which is one of our big states across here. And I've always wondered if that genetic component of, being a ref having those f refined skills to play golf and to strike that ball so perfectly was passed on to Ash, and her nervous system was different to definitely different to mine. I was never close to being elite. So it's not a comfortable question. Most of us want to accept, especially about 10, 15 years ago, there was this big movement to the 10,000-hour rule, where if you put in your practice, you could do it. And I'm not against that. I'm not against that as a message. For most of us, putting in more time, refining our skills, aiming for those 10,000 hours, there's so many positive messages there. But the fact of the matter is, if you're talking about a Roger Federer or an Ash Barty or the absolute pinnacle, the 0.1% of the 0.1%, there's definitely a genetic component there. And I worry that people could look at that and think this is the way to do things. And those are often the successful people who are writing the books. And then you get the parents or the up and comers reading that and thinking this is definitely the way to do it. And what I'm saying is maybe, but until you account for those genetic differences, which there definitely are at that top level, it's hard to embrace everything that they do and then kind of dilute it to our level of, oh, I'm including you. I don't even know how genetically talented you are, but definitely not to my level. I was a guy who probably needed more training than an Ash Barty. So, didn't really answer your question, but
No,
I think it's
you
important for
did.
people to understand.
No, you definitely answered it. And I think also, especially women, I think that it's been greatly underestimated that we have a different hormone cycle. Like men, you're 24 hours on the spot, you know your recovery, you know all your things, and like our cycle is not that. In fact, our
No, it's
cycle's
weeks.
even different between us. And so I think that affects the nervous system. And I think that's also something that's going to say, does this person need more or less? If it's going to be, even in my personal journey of fitness, the more I did, I went backwards because my nervous system was not letting me do things like, recover and calm down. I was like in fight or flight because I have to get this workout in, I have to do more, and all of a sudden I've done less in the since January, and I've had way better results. So it, yeah.
That's amazing. I'm so glad you brought this up because no one has talked, like, I'd love to talk more about this. So my background was, I'm actually South African. I moved to Australia in my mid-20s. I'm approaching 50 way too quickly. And so my coaching history was rugby, which is a ma well, it was with males. So it was rugby union. You guys probably won't know the difference, but there was another type of rugby league. I worked with a sport called Aussie Rules, which is like a kicking game, but you also catch it. Anyway, male dominated. And then I switched over to tennis in 2008. And it's the first time I'm working with female athletes. And I'm like, yes, exactly. And in the beginning, I didn't even think that there'd be that much difference. But I was so lucky. One of my great friends is the five-time Australian swim coach of the year, and his success in the early, so you remember Australia was dominant in swimming in the early 2000s. We hosted the Olympics, Sydney Olympics in 2000s. I came just after that, but he was in that era, and his record with female athletes was amazing. And I called him one day and I said, Steph, you got to help me here. Like, I didn't feel like I was connecting with my female athletes that well. And it was amazing. It was probably one of the best coffees I've ever had in terms of my career development. And he gave me some insights. And it was really interesting because I'll give you one example. So we had this thing that if you trained really well from Monday to Thursday, for the boys, there were a few mirrors in the gym, and the boys could have shirts off Friday. And it was seen as a treat. Like, the harder they worked, they could come and do a gym session, and we'd do like bodybuilding and stuff. This is for these skinny little tennis players. And they'd do it. But for the girls, and this is off the back of my sort of, I suppose, mentor slash friend, he said, no, 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 go do something that they love. So I chatted with the girls, and they were tired of the gym and stuff. And their reward, it still had to be physical. It still had to, it wasn't like we were having a treat, but I would take them to a sort of a commercial gym, and they'd do a step class or something with music or something, and they loved it.
Yes.
But me giving that to the girls, which is still another fitness session, still gets a heart rate up, I got so much more buy-in into my programs. And then there was a second one. I was talking to the Swiss Fed Cup coach. Now, just for your listeners, there's the Davis Cup, which is a men's competition, and you compete for your country, and then the women's competition is the Fed Cup. And chatting to him, and he said another insightful thing to me, and he said most people, and it's so you're going to laugh at how obvious it is. But for me, this was groundbreaking with a history of working with males athletes. And he said that most coaches who are men train women as almost like a disabled man. So it's you can't bench press as much, or you can't squat as much, or you can't run as fast. And he said, no. And especially in tennis, it's a totally different game. And one example is in tennis, in the men's game, the serve is the most important stroke. Like, and if you lose your serve, that's a big thing. There's a good chance if it's an even game, you might have lost the set by losing your serve. In the women's game, it's exactly the opposite. With not being a strong overhead, the return of serve is probably the most important. So to lose your serve is not as big for the woman as it is for the men, but to hold your serve is a bigger thing than for the men. And so once you start understanding that, your training becomes different, your goals become different, what you emphasize. And if next time, you're listening to, you're watching the US Open or Wimbledon or Australian Open, French, whatever it is, listen to the commentators. Most of them will say that they will create the same, I don't know, not disappointment, but they'll think it's the same effect when a man loses his serve and a woman does. And for anyone who understands women's tennis, it shouldn't be like that. But that's that bias that comes in. And yeah, it needs to be different. So anyway, great pickup. No one's ever talked about it, and I struggled to get this point out there. So awesome. Thank you.
No, yeah, of course. And I think that's something too in the whole idea of like, Grant, I live in the United States, okay? Everybody is fat and sick and like they're not healthy and
Hey, we're
everything
not far
works.
behind you.
Yeah.
We are Australia's not far behind you.
They're getting
Yeah, carry on.
cozy, huh? Getting cozy with their Netflix and their cell phones and their DoorDash and whatever it is. But even just talking to people, I try to tell people, because I think even in mindset coaching, right? Or even when I'm working with someone who's creating a podcast, I'm like, how are you kind of filling up your cup? What are you doing for yourself? Are you moving your body? Are you doing things? Well, I can't go to the gym. I don't care about the gym. Like, if you could literally find something you love, like your girls who want to do the step class with the music, like you find something you love for women. It's going to get so much better results in your body than just going and trying to do a strict training regimen. And that's just for everyday people. There's so many things you can do. A lot of people love yoga Pilates. I personally, it makes me angry. I want to kill somebody. I can do treadmill. I can lift heavy weights, but I can't do like the slow stuff. It drives me nuts. So everybody's different, but I think just even that common move your body, do something you love. Make
Yes.
it a fun thing. That's a first right step. Go for a walk outside. There's no pressure. There's no like you have to get X amount of steps. Just go outside and like be in nature. It's amazing. But I think that helps us with our recovery because that's important too. And I have a daughter who, well, both of my girls ran cross country and track in college. And my daughter now is she's still very, very much into her routine and her space still. Runs here and there for, enters on the side. But I worry about her because of her recovery, because her sleep is terrible. Like her sleep is terrible. And I think this is going to catch up to you someday because she runs like 10 miles a day and does weight training. Like she is really, really kind of excessively hard on herself in this moment, I think. But why do so many people underestimate that importance of recovery?
I think especially for type A personalities, it's the pain, the movement, like sitting down and doing nothing, or they th it's perceived as doing nothing. And so it's interesting. I think of recovery as something that you can do. I'm not sure how to say this, but I'll give you a quick practical example. For me, recovery, especially with athletes, is less about ice baths and saunas and massage and all that kind of stuff. It's more sort of fundamental than that, and it's less interventionist. And what I mean by that is, take Ash. So if she had a bad match or a high stress match or something like this, we used to go to the driving range and play golf. And there'd be the two of us, and we'd be hitting some golf balls. And it was a form of recovery because I could actually see her forget about what had happened on the court, forget about what the press was saying, forget about all that kind of stuff. And it's just focused. And the Ash that walked onto the driving range and the Ash that walked off the driving range were two different people. And it was just kind of taking her out of that world. Another example I give is I used to give my tennis players, who are typically individual athletes, playing often on a hard court, but it could be clay or grass, but often on a hard court, really pounding their bodies. And I used to organize touch football. So it's I suppose you go it like touch gridiron kind of, it can be fun and whatever. And I'd organize a team and I'd bring in some like former athletes that I used to work with my tennis players. And a bunch of people who are fairly athletic, and we just play. And it would be barefoot on grass. And often the guys would take their shirts off and just be in the sun and just, and same sort of thing. It wasn't the recovery that a lot of people think about, again, as I mentioned, ice baths, saunas, massage, a stretch session or something like this. It was recovery with a social aspect. And although it would even be competitive, it wasn't the same stress levels of being an individual athlete isolated on a court across a net with TV and press and all that kind of stuff. It would just be on a random school field with no one watching, and we're just having fun and laughing and trying things. And I think that needs to be brought in. So to your point, I think 100% you're right. Start with what you love and what you can do. So you don't have to go to the gym. You don't have to spend 45 minutes there. You don't have to do personal training. You don't have to do 10,000. What do you like? What do you like that where you're moving and you, I don't know, burning calories or whatever you want to call it. And then from a recovery perspective, what do you also want to, what can you do that you just enjoy, that you feel better afterwards? And for your listeners, one of the things that I'll be talking about is with your recovery, look at whether you're consuming or creating. And so it's a little differentiation I have in my mind because I don't want people at the end of the week to go, oh, let me just fill up on wine, watch Netflix, and order DoorDash. That to me is not recovery because that's all consumption. If you go and say, hey, I love to read a book or do some knitting or whatever my little hobby is, much like you're taking Ash to the driving range where she's, kind of working on another skill, that form of recovery is so much better. But right now, when people have had a tough week, they default to the consumption side of things. And then the next day you wake up either without a, maybe you don't have a hangover, maybe it's not that bad, but you're not waking up on the front foot. You don't feel good after binge watching Netflix for 4 hours. You're not going to feel good after ordering some takeout that's whatever, high in seed oils or whatever the case might be. So if you can just add that little thing, like it's more on the creation side of things. So it can still be an example would be a walk, a hike or a walk through a forest. To me, that is way better than, but you might not feel like doing that, like putting on your hiking boots or your shoes and going out, but it's way, way better form of recovery than what most people are doing at the end of their stressful weeks.
No, we have 2 days a week now that we're in the summer in Michigan here. We get 2 days a week at the beach, and that's the recovery. Whether it's just drowning in a book or I'm staring at the horizon, it is like the most fill my cup up. And we're always tracking through the sand, and my hands are full. So I even get like a little, my heart rate's elevated at least 2 points in that time. So I do think it's it's important like to have that kind of recovery. I want to talk a little bit about the supplement industry. I learned the hard way through this experience that it's really just like a bunch of bullshit, really. What frustrates you the most about today's supplement industry?
Oof. I'm only allowed to pick one thing.
Well, yeah, we can highlight a few, I'm sure.
I suppose there's a few things. And one of the reasons we got into this is my frustrations with what was happening or what is happening. There's a few. So number one, one thing in Australia, we've got very, very high standards. We've got the TGA, the Therapeutic Goods Association. They're kind of like your FDA,
Okay.
but so much stricter. And w which is probably good for our population, but it really, to me, it aligns. So we are not allowed to make any outrageous claims. And right now, we are talking to some US distributors. We're looking at getting into the US market, and our distributors in the US are super frustrated with us because our labeling and our packaging, they say our claims are not strong enough. We need to push the boundaries more. And we're like, no, but like we're not saying that this definitely cures or X definitely cures Y. We're saying X might help support the Y system, you know, and so it's tough in the US, and so you guys are exposed to way more marketing claims that aren't as justified as they should be, and the research doesn't have to be too strong. And so in your space, well, that is tough because you're taking things, you're being told things, you're trusting, you know, the packaging, you're trusting the company, whatever, and the evidence does not align with what those claims are. There's also a little bit, again, I'm not picking on the states. I don't know if you know this. I
Pick
actually
on
used
the
to live
states.
in, sorry?
I said pick on the states. It's fine.
No, well, let me clarify this. I love your country. In 96, I was a Rotary exchange student to Long Island, New York. And
Nice.
we went around the country for six weeks, and traveling around, there's 282 exchange students around. So, and I go back anytime I can and any excuse I can. So I really love the US. So this doesn't come from any jealousy or anything like that. It comes purely from a place of love, but these are also facts. And so to me, it's so frustrating because you get people who get burnt by my industry in that they are believing the packaging, believing the claims, believing what the advertising is saying. And so then for us who are more constrained and more evidence-based, our products slide down the consumers. They either slide down from a trust perspective or they're kind of hidden away because, you know, if you're a desperate person and one says, this will definitely cure you, and another product says this may help support you, you're going to choose the definitely cured one. You know, that's a product you're going to go for.
Of course.
So that's one of my frustrations. Another one is the lack of testing that happens. So when you work with elite athletes, you have to make sure that everything they put in their body is legal from a sports perspective. Otherwise, they could have easy 2 year, 4 year bans, lifetime bans. And so we've taken that mindset, and even though Propel Health is now more on the health side of supplements rather than the performance side of supplements, we've taken that same mindset. So, for example, one common thing in agriculture is a poison, a herbicide called glyphosate. It's in Roundup,
We
and
have it in everything we eat and drink. I know.
100%. There are studies which show now it's in a huge percentage of your population and probably a large percentage of our population too, to the point where it's no longer just used as a herbicide. Farmers have worked out that if they spray their crops after it's been harvested, it dries quicker, which means they can sell it quicker. And so, like, it's bad, especially if you're eating wheat products. And the early studies on glyphosate showed that it didn't have an effect on humans. I say the early studies because Humans don't have this particular pathway that these plants do, these weeds do, that that glyphosate works on. So the manufacturers came out and said it's safe for humans. I'm not saying I agree with the research, but there's now later research which says, okay, cool, maybe that's the case. But you know, our gut bacteria, some of it, about 50% of it, does have that pathway, and glyphosate can kill that gut bacteria. So you could be eating some bread, which you think is a long way away from sort of a pure farmed product that's containing glyphosate because of the wheat and the wheat drying process. You're eating that, and that glyphosate is then killing the good bacteria in your gut, in your digestive system, and it's making you worse. So coming back to what I was trying to say is we get all our agricultural powders. So, for example, we've got a beetroot powder, high in nitrates, very good for nitric oxide, really good for endurance athletes. We've got some gut health prebiotic fibers. They come from the guar bean, guar gum bean. So it's called partially hydrolyzed guar gum. Really, really good food for your good bacteria. But if it contained glyphosate, it's doing more damage,
Damage.
I believe, than good. So we independently test all our products for that glyphosate to ensure that the end user, our customers, are not doing their health worse. However, most people will look at the product on the shelf and go, why is Propel Health product so much more expensive? Oh, it's because of the testing. But until they understand why we test and what we test for, they're going to choose more. I guess they might choose the cheaper product.
Cheaper.
And so that's another frustration where we're trying to get the message out. No, you as an individual, don't wait for the FDA, don't wait for the TGA, don't wait for these government bodies to protect your health. They might not. You yourself have to take ownership of your health, understand what you're taking or what you're supplementing with, or what you, even in the case of wheat or bread or whatever, what you're eating, and you have to take that ownership and do the research. It's tiring. But the corporations are against you. It often feels like the government is against. Am I getting too conspiracy theorist?
No, because I literally am about to just go crazy on the fact this supplement industry, like the thing that makes me the most mad is that there are these incredible products that we should have access to because they are plant-based and because they work, but we're up against big pharma and we're up against the government and there is no money in a healthy person. And so it's crazy to me that I can't tell people, you know, the actual claim of something I take or how, what it's done for me because everybody gets shut down. I can't tell the truth about this, you know, because whatever. And then in our country, then what happens is they come in and they shut it down. So it's like I've seen these companies over and over have something, an incredible product. It's changing lives, people having cancer reversed, people, I mean, just a million things that are happening and it's very obvious. And they come in and they shut everything down. And they make products illegal, and it's frustrating.
No, I feel your pain. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. Well, I think too, gut health is not it's not talked about enough. I think people don't, you know, it needs to be an important topic of conversation because, I mean,
100%.
you could probably speak to my audience about this. Like, what role does the microbiome play beyond digestion?
Yeah, I mean, like, so here's my thing is once you understand that gut health underpins almost everything. So, for example, you go to a dermatologist and you say, my daughter or my skin is whatever, and I've got psoriasis. And the medical thinking at the moment is straight treat the symptom. And so you'll get a steroid or cream or something to rub on your hands, whatever the thing is, and it works for 3 months. And then it stops working. So you go back to the dermatologist and they prescribe a stronger steroid cream. And, it works now for 6 weeks. And then and it just keeps, and they're just treating the symptom. But one of my favorite things in it is if you, and this is not my original idea, I saw this somewhere. Someone put it, they put their finger on their cheek and they said, just trace your finger along your cheek into your mouth. And then you kind of, you're going straight into your gut. It's contiguous. So just on a simple thing, hair, nails, and skin, if you've got any issue there, you've got to be looking at the gut because it's all contiguous. It just continues along. And I'm not saying it's exactly the same tissues. I'm just saying that it's all connected.
Connected.
So that's number one. And then as I started going down this, do you know that? So one of the products I talked about earlier, PHGG, partially hydrolyzed guar gum, great for gut health. They've done studies and they found that people who took PHGG improved their motivation. And I was like, what? This is in the early days when I'm kind of learning about gut health. And then the way I thought about it is imagine the opposite. So your stomach's, you're feeling bloated or heavy or something not right. It's hard then to be enthusiastic, go for that run, hit the gym, whatever, if your stomach's not right. So if you align things and your stomach is amazing, and when I say stomach, I'm really meaning the whole digestive tract, then there's a good chance that your motivation or your mental attitude towards things can work. And then you think about it, and this is especially important for I probably have realized this a little bit too late with female athletes. So a lot of female athletes have poor iron. All right. And that you understand that with the cycle and the hard training. And so they have high levels of fatigue and whatever. And what happens? Oh yeah, take a pill or take an injection. No one digs deeper and says, why do you have poor iron? And very basically it could be nutrition, like you're not consuming enough iron. So maybe then a tablet can help. But you could also consume enough, but your body's not absorbing enough. Then you could be absorbing enough, but it's not retaining it well enough. So there's all these steps, and each of those steps would have a different intervention. But one thing that's interesting is as your gut health improves, so two things happen. One is you absorb nutrients better. So, for example, there's a bacteria, Bacillus coagulans, and that really helps with calcium absorption. So instead of just taking more and more tablets or getting some kind of injection, you improve your Bacillus coagulans bacteria in your gut, and whatever calcium you're taking, it's more efficient in being absorbed by your body. So that's number one. And then number two, if your gut has, they call it leaky gut syndrome, or there's some kind of inflammation there, maybe some bad stuff is getting into your body through the gut lining. So it's either good stuff's not getting in, or bad stuff is getting in. And so it doesn't matter if one or both of those two things are happening. It doesn't really matter what superficial thing that you can have. There's another example. So, and you're going to have to excuse me on the numbers, they'll be directionally correct, but I don't know them off the top of my head. But if a woman has two bouts of antibiotics in a year, she has something like a 70 to 80% chance, increased chance of depression. Now, you think of antibiotics. Oh, I'm not feeling really well. Go to the doctor. Yeah, take some antibiotics. Oh, I've got a UTI. No worries. He has antibiotics. Two in 12 months, and you've increased your chances of depression. Why? Because the antibiotics, not only do they kill the bad bacteria, which is a good thing, medically, like I'm really happy that we've got antibiotics, but it also kills the good bacteria. So if there are things that you can take or hold off from taking that antibiotic, or take the least amount, or the version that is the least strong. And there's a study that showed that up to 4 to 8 years later, after certain antibiotics, the gut health can still be disrupted. 4 to 8 years. So it's not like I took a 2 week dose and 2 weeks later, everything's back to normal. No, no. 4 years later, you could still have a disrupted gut. And then with the disrupted gut, poor nutrient absorption potentially, bad nutrients are getting into your body, poor motivation, skin, hair, nails, whole bunch of things.
No, it is wild that people kind of take for granted that everything is connected, and our medical system is just all about like take this pill, take this cream, and here's this for the side effects. This isn't working, so let's try this other one, and it's never really getting to the root cause again because our healthcare industry is a business. That's all it is.
Yes.
It is a
Yeah.
business, and I've been a steward of my own health, and the doctors, doctor's office would probably be the last place you would find me. But
It's such a tough one because the doctors are getting, I'm guessing a lot of them would be going there to help people, but from the day one of their education, it's geared, it's funded, it's directed, it's influenced by company corporations that are purely profit driven.
And that's exactly it. They get the bonus for pushing shots. They get a bonus for, who's on what medication. And then you've got the big pharmaceutical company who gives a lot of incentives. And at this point, you're a doctor with a big college debt. So what are you going to say? No, never mind. I want to heal people. I want to cure people. I think it's tough. I do think it's tough. And there's a place for the medical industry, right? Like my kid has a broken arm. I'm not going to fix that. Right, like there's things that warrant that for me, so I don't want people to be like, oh my gosh, I've had six C-sections. Like there's, a place for the medical industry, but when it comes to your health, I think it is important that you are becoming aware of yourself. You know your body better than anybody. I would say, what are some of the biggest myths around aging?
Aging. Biggest myths. one of the things that I'd like to crush, and I don't know if this is a myth, I suppose it falls into that, but it's more the inevitability of putting on weight, feeling sore, struggling to get out of bed, poor sleep. Those things don't have to happen. Those things do happen, but I think it's more of a lifestyle kind of thing. If we keep some level of muscle mass, which doesn't have to be a huge amount of training, and we keep some level of physical activity, and I know we're not saying, I'm not always saying get your 10,000 steps, but directionally that is good. And if you look at the study that came up with that 10,000, there were still benefits of 17,000 steps. Like the benefits continued. And where I'm going with this is we shouldn't be accepting that our knees always sore, that we're changing body shape. There are definite steps that we have to take. Now, I'll say this is that the environment is encouraging us to do that, isn't it? Like Netflix, someone, I love this saying, someone said that Netflix's biggest competitor is sleep. When
That
you
is
think about
true.
it, like how many times, just one more episode, let me, like I'll deal with this in the morning, but what happens is as our environment goes more that direction where you don't have to do physical activity, you mentioned the things, the DoorDash, the Netflix, all that, you do have to be, you have to resist more, because the environment is different. Our bodies are best adapted to an environment of scarcity. Okay. So we could go a few days without food. We could go a number of hours without hydration. We could go, that's what our bodies are best adapted to. And now, in the last 100 years, 50 years, it kind of has accelerated, last 20 years, last 5 years, we are in a environment of an abundance. And so it's totally understandable. I'm not saying justifiable, but it's totally understandable where to be able to put on this weight, because when you are used to, when your body's best adapted to some scarcity and you've got this high calorie, delicious meal that's just arrived at your door, you didn't have to hunt, you didn't have to dig, you didn't have to, prepare it or anything like that. It's just right there. And previously, like back when we were on the plains of Africa or wherever we were, for us to eat a high calorie meal meant we had to exert high calories to get it, catch it, prepare it, whatever. And now that balance is out of whack. So when, again, coming, sorry, I'm going on all these
I
tangents, I
love
do
it.
apologize. You
No,
kind of like throw me a bone and then just let me go wild.
I love it.
But yeah, we are going to have to take more ownership of our health. We should be looking at probably closer to what our ancestors did, or what we understand our ancestors did, more than what's normal. And it is going to take, especially as a parent with kids and stuff like that. One thing I always say to parents is, if you are not the strictest parents with screens, with treats, with, Coke and soda and all that kind of stuff, if you're not the strictest parent, you're probably doing your kid a disservice. If
It's
your
true.
kid's not going, "Mom, Dad, everyone else is allowed to," and you're like, "Yeah," and that's For us to be healthy, that's what we have to be.
Yeah. No, I hear that every day, all day. Other kids, and I'm like, I don't care about other kids.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. This is our deal here. So,
Yeah.
yeah, I love that. Grant, we're running out of time here, and I want to make sure you get to talk about some of the products you offer and this company, how people can find it and get resourced with you.
All right, so the best place to jump on is propelhealthaustralia.com. That's our website. I try publish an article. I do publish an article a week, a blog post where I've taken the science and I'm building this library so anyone who has health conditions can find our products and they know that it's heavily referenced. It's something that is it's readable. These blog posts are readable, and I've taken the science and I've kind of distilled it or translated it. So if you're just a mom or a dad or someone looking at interest in your health, it's there. My starting point is if you have some kind of condition or disease and it's taken a long time and doctors don't really know what's happening, maybe actually, regardless, look into gut health. I'm not saying you have to have our products. Maybe it could just be sorting out your nutrition a little bit better. You don't always have to take a supplement. But if you go propelhealthaustralia.com, that would help us. And if you've got any questions, there's a contact form there. You can send it. I reply to everyone. And don't worry, I'm not always pushing our products. In fact, I often say that our products shouldn't exist. If we can sort out food and
Yeah.
distribution and exercise, hopefully, we just fade out and I can continue just coaching in the gym.
Right.
But yeah, that would be the best place. And we can offer let's chat offline and I'll offer your listeners a discount that we can put together so that they can at least trial and it's not too expensive or anything like that.
Perfect. I love that. Well, Grant, this is the part of the show where I get to tell you what I think makes you special. And it's not the supplements, it's not the company, it's not even the decades of coaching. I feel like what makes you special is that you understand performance from the inside out. You have seen the elite athletes succeed, you've seen others fail, and you've learned that greatness isn't built on motivation. It's built on that consistency, on recovery and discipline and understanding the fundamentals with the world out here just chasing the hacks and putting on the quick fixes. You're willing to look inside and see what's connected and how this is going to affect us in a lot of areas in our life. I think helping people focus on that foundation and get to their core health and see themselves for who they are is amazing. I think it's powerful. To everyone listening, your health is not a side project, okay? It's the foundation everything else sits on. And that means your business, your family, your purpose, your impact in the world. So take care of the machine that you're living in, not because you're chasing perfection, but because you've been entrusted with this one body and one life. So invest in it and protect it and respect it. And please remember your mess is your message. Even the setbacks, injuries, maybe burnout, those experiences often become the lessons that teach us about what really matters in life. If this episode speaks to you, please share it out. You can check the links in the show notes to make sure you get resourced, get that discount here, and just share Grant's story out. And if you guys are ready for the hot seat, I dare you to come tell me why you're special. Grant, thank you so much for being up here bright and early to speak to my audience today.
Absolute pleasure. It's been fun. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely.